For years, Democrats have been lying to Americans. No, of course we won't take your guns, they say. The latest iteration of this lie, it came last week, courtesy of President Obama. He told a gun shop owner, quote, first of all, the notion that I or Hillary or Democrats or whomever you want to choose are hellbent on taking away folks' guns, that's just not true. And I don't care how many times the NRA says it. Well, that's not true. On This Week with George Stephanopoulos, Hillary was asked about the Second Amendment. Stephanopoulos, who makes out with Hillary in his spare time, he asked, quote, do you believe that an individual's right to bear arms is a constitutional right, that it's not linked to service in a militia? Hillary answered, quote, I think that for most of our history, there was a nuanced reading of the Second Amendment. That would be a no, gang. She then added, if it is a constitutional right, if, then it, like every other constitutional right, is subject to reasonable regulations. But that wasn't the question. First off, there's no if in the Second Amendment. It exists. It applies personally. It always applied personally. Only completely constitutional ignoramuses would argue that the militia clause makes gun ownership dependent on membership in an organized police force. That's just dumb and historically ignorant. But second, the question of reasonable regulation is a constitutional one. There's no definition of reasonable that Hillary gets to define the boundaries of gun ownership, any more than reasonable regulations of the First Amendment allow Hillary to define the regulations of the First Amendment. To allow her that power would end in the destruction of gun rights. And here's what she said. She said, I'm going to continue to speak out for comprehensive background checks, closing the gun show loophole, closing the online loophole, closing the so-called Charleston loophole, reversing the bill Senator Sanders voted for and I voted against, giving immunity from liability to gun makers and sellers. Comprehensive background checks require a database of gun ownership, which allows the government to seize your guns. There is no online loophole. If I buy a gun online, it's then shipped to a federally licensed firearms dealer who does a background check on me. And Hillary's notion that gun makers should be liable for a perfectly functioning gun if a bad guy gets a hold of the gun, well, that bankrupts the gun companies the same way that it would bankrupt a car company if you could sue the car manufacturer every time somebody misused a car and got into a car crash. It would effectively bankrupt the car business, and that would effectively bankrupt the gun business. That's Hillary's plan. Hillary doesn't believe in a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. She couches it in terms of regulations, but then she won't even say that the right exists in the first place. She wants to reverse Justice Scalia's decision in D.C. versus Heller, which simply said, what's obvious, individuals have such a right to keep and bear arms. Of course, Hillary's coming after our guns. There's a reason she has consistently, over and over again, cited gun confiscation in England and Australia as her model. When Obama said to the gun shop owner, gun sales have skyrocketed under his tenure. This is how he defended himself. He said, I can't be in favor of banning guns. The gun sales skyrocketed. Well, that's silly. The reason they skyrocketed is because we were all afraid he was going to take our guns, so we went out and we bought more of them. That fear is justified under both Obama and Clinton. Watch for gun sales and prices to skyrocket in short order. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Tend to demonize people who don't care about your feelings.
Alrighty, folks, we have a jam-packed show, and we have to speed through it today as we do every single day. The most jam-packed show in radio slash television slash internet. So, we begin today with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is running a horrible campaign. As I've said, it's one of the worst campaigns in the history of American politics. And as I just mentioned, Hillary has basically said now that she doesn't believe in basic Second Amendment rights. So Hillary was asked by George Stephanopoulos, who, as I also said, makes out with Hillary in his spare time. Back in his autobiography, he said in 1996 that he and Hillary had a moment after Bill won re-election in which Hillary looked at George Stephanopoulos and said, I love you, George. And he looked back at her and said, I love you too, Hillary. And then they started making out until she realized he wasn't a woman. But in any case, Hillary says that she's asked by George Stephanopoulos, objective journalist George Stephanopoulos. She's asked by George Stephanopoulos if there is a right to keep and bear arms. And here's Hillary's answer.
Do you believe that an individual's right to bear arms is a constitutional right, that it's not linked to service in a militia?
I think that for most of our history, there was a nuanced reading of the Second Amendment until the decision by the late Justice Scalia. And there was no argument until then that localities and states and the federal government had a right, as we do with every amendment, to impose reasonable regulations. So I believe we can have common sense gun safety measures consistent with the Second Amendment. And in fact, what I have proposed is supported by 90% of the American people and more than 75% of responsible gun owners. So that is exactly what I think is constitutionally permissible. And once again, you have Donald Trump just making outright fabrications, accusing me of something that is absolutely untrue. But I'm going to continue to speak out for comprehensive background checks, closing the gun show loophole, closing the online loophole, closing the so-called Charleston loophole, reversing the bill that Senator Sanders voted for and I voted against, giving immunity from liability to gun makers and sellers.
I think we can stop it there. She's audio deaf. But Hillary Clinton says that she wants your guns, basically. But Donald Trump is lying when he says that she wants your guns. So no, Donald Trump is not lying. She does, in fact, want your guns. She followed that up over the weekend. She was apparently, she hasn't had a press conference in something like half a year. And there's a new report out saying that she doesn't like talking to the press. She tries to avoid the press at all costs. And look at her spokespeople try to run from this problem. Here's Hillary's spokesperson, Brian Fallon, saying she doesn't have any reluctance to talk to the press.
We're going to continue to do national press availabilities with our traveling press corps, press conferences sometimes
as well. But you're
getting
hammered for this lack of press conferences. What's the reason why she's reluctant to give press conferences?
There's no reluctance. I think that oftentimes we will do an event at the end of the day, we will do an avail, what would be known as an avail to the people in your business, where she informally comes out after an event is concluded, after she's taken some photos and some selfies, and she'll literally stand there for 15, 20 minutes and answer questions from her traveling press corps, including the embeds from the various networks. And
okay, we can
in
stop
terms
it there.
Of a
so
definition.
The truth is that she has spent in the last half year a grand total of 46 minutes on such avails. So Hillary's running a bad campaign. She's running a bad campaign. Everybody knows it. She's a target-rich environment. Bernie Sanders is now threatening that Hillary Clinton isn't going to get his supporters if he drops out, if he finishes up. Jake Tapper asked him about this on CNN. There's chaos in the Democratic Party.
What is your message to those people? Obviously, you want their support and you want to be the nominee.
Right.
But is Bernie or bust a palatable position?
Well, I think to answer your question, the idea that I can snap my fingers and have millions of supporters kind of march in line, that is not what our effort is about. I think if I am not the nominee, and we're going to fight to become the nominee, it is Secretary Clinton's job to explain to those people why she should get their support. And that means she's going to have to address their needs. Secretary Clinton is going to have to make the convincing argument to them that how could it be that she's getting huge amounts of money from Wall Street and other powerful special interests, and she is going to stand up and fight for them.
But no matter what, are you going to work hard to make sure that Donald Trump loses and the Democratic candidate, whether it's you or her?
Yes.
Yes, so he'll work hard, but he can't guarantee that people are going to fall into line. Worth noting here, I just realized that Bernie Sanders has the exact same cadence of William Shatner. He also just has a Brooklyn accent. So if you just did William Shatner, with a Brooklyn accent, then you get Bernie Sanders. In any case, Sanders is on the attack against Hillary Clinton, and she's having a tough time defending. Bernie Sanders, he's now ripping on the Clinton Foundation. So at this point, he's really wishing that he had cared about her damn emails. You remember when that in debate was said, nobody cares about your damn emails. Well, it turns out that he probably should have cared more. Now he's in his final death throes of his campaign. Today is the California, or tomorrow is the California primary. And Bernie really needs to win if he wants to remain alive in this race at all. So he's taking the kitchen sink and finally throwing it at Hillary. He says that the Clinton Foundation is a problem. Here he is explaining it to Jake Tapper.
There are those who say that there's something inherently wrong with an American charity, especially one with ties to a Secretary of State, taking money from the Saudis and other foreign governments that don't represent our values. Is that a fair criticism?
Yes, it is. It is. If you ask me about the Clinton Foundation, do I have a problem when a sitting Secretary of State and a foundation run by her husband collects many millions of dollars from foreign governments, governments which are dictatorships? You don't have a lot of civil liberties or democratic rights in Saudi Arabia. You don't have a lot of respect there for opposition points of view, for gay rights, for women's rights. Do I have a problem with that? Yeah, I do.
You think it creates an appearance of conflict of interest?
Yeah, I do.
And Bill is having a tough time answering this. So here's Bill Clinton trying to defend his wife, Bill looking like a walking corpse. On Bloomberg here, being asked about the Clinton Foundation and Bernie Sanders' critique.
ExxonMobil has said that they are not going to sponsor CGI this year. Is this because of the funding controversy?
Well, I think they don't want to be involved in politics. They don't think we were ever political. There's never been a more, foundation with a prominent political person involved in it like me. It's been more non-political. I've had George and Laura Bush here, Mitt Romney, John McCain, and Sarah Palin came. I've got all these. Rupert Murdoch and his son and his foundation have given money to us, along with Mayor Bloomberg. We just saw problems. But a lot of there are people who just don't like bad press. And you can't be involved in modern American politics without somebody attacking you. And I think that the fact that there are so many other channels like Bloomberg and the social media means that, in effect, if somebody wants to go negative, it's, I think, sort of a tribute to my wife that it all happened now. And we've got all this, all the social media and the alternative ways of communicating. And I think, in the end, the foundation will stand or fall on the work it does.
Okay, so Bill Clinton he's starting to look more and more nutty out there, and you can see him watching the lesbian pornography in his head. I mean, there's nothing going on in there. He's like, I can't believe I'm being trotted out for this. So it's a bad week for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and it's a worse week because at the end of last week, we didn't have a chance to talk about this, there are a bunch of riots in San Jose. So Trump speaks in San Jose, and here's a little bit of what it looked like in San Jose with people going nuts and beating up Trump supporters in San Jose. Trump was speaking inside an arena there.
Mexico and still have the land. Did you know that California used to be Mexico? In California, Mexico to die.
And there are the cops doing a stellar job.
Yeah, he should be good.
You didn't say anything to anybody? We're just walking out, or what?
I was walking out with our Trump sign. He grabbed my Trump sign and started following me, saying I was like a racist.
You said
and stuff. Yeah,
it was so you literally didn't say anything to provoke them at all.
I was just like, yeah, Trump.
So you can hear people chanting, and they're chanting obscene things. And for those who can't see, you need to subscribe to Daily Wire so you can see all of this, and you can subscribe and get 30 days for free. And obviously send mail into the mailbag as well. For those who can't see, there are people being cold-cocked, people being punched, people, a woman having eggs thrown at her. And my favorite is the guy who gets hit with the bag, and he's bleeding from above his ear. And the cops are asking him, did you say anything to provoke the people? As though that there's nothing you can say that provokes somebody to punch you in the face. All of this, put aside the evil of the left. Okay, I've talked about the mobocracy of the left's reliance on these mobs to do their dirty work for them and provide sort of the impetus for government action from the outside. So you have riots in Ferguson so that Obama can then say, oh, I'm fixing it to prevent riots like that from happening again. Right? Marion Barry used to do this in D.C. We've talked about this in Baltimore. The idea is that you have a riot, and then people say, oh, well, if we don't want those people to riot, what can we do with the power of government to make things all better? Now you've got the anti-Trump people doing the same thing. The idea is shut up Donald Trump or we're going to beat people up. In the end, this helps Donald Trump, politically speaking, because people look at this kind of stuff. I look at this kind of stuff and I said, these people have to be defeated. These people are terrible. I mean, I've spoken at universities after the so-called chalkening, when people were chalking Trump 2016 and other people were going nuts and going to the administration and crying. And I've chalked Trump 2016 myself, even though I really think Donald Trump is terrible. Because the idea is that you have to stop the fascists, and one way of stopping the fascists, presumably, might be to stand up for the guy who ticks off the fascists. We'll get to why that's not a proper solution in a second. Okay, so Bernie Sanders has to come out and tell the supporters to knock off the violence. And again, all of this puts Trump in the catbird seat politically, because if the left is seen as violent, then people want somebody who's going to come in and restore law and order. And the left is violent. The left is terrible. People who are saying, by the way, we'll get to this in a second, but people who are saying that Trump brought this on himself or brought it on his supporters, that's not how free speech works, gang. Donald Trump is responsible for his supporters engaging in violence that he encourages, but you're not responsible for people acting violently against you. That's their decision. And Donald Trump is not responsible for people acting violent to his supporters. That's absurd. And it's nasty. Here's Bernie Sanders telling his supporters they need to knock off the violence.
Some of these people who have been very violent have been seen with your signs, Bernie Sanders signs, chanting your name. Do you condemn the violence?
I condemn it absolutely. And let's be very clear. I mean, we got millions and millions of people who are supporting us. And I want to make it clear that any person who is a Bernie Sanders supporter, please do not in any way, shape, or form engage in violence. That is absolutely not what this campaign is about.
Okay. He would go on to knock on Trump, to blast Trump, but that part is correct. Hillary actually spells out the message. She says violence is bad, but Trump's responsible for it. Here's Hillary being a terrible person.
Do you condemn the violence? What is your message to people who are protesting Donald Trump?
I condemn all violence in our political arena. I condemned it when Donald Trump was inciting it and congratulating people who were engaging in it. I condemn it by those who are taking violent protests to physical assault against Donald Trump. This has to end. He set a very bad example. He created an environment in which it seemed to be acceptable for someone running for president to be inciting violence, to be encouraging his supporters. Now we're seeing people who are against him responding in kind. It should all stop. It is not acceptable.
At the end of the day, do you think that those violent anti-Trump protesters actually might be helping him in a way by showing his opposition in such a horrendous light?
I don't think any of this helps anybody. I don't think his protests that were led by his supporters, beating up people who were peacefully protesting against...
Hillary's a terrible person, okay? So the reason Hillary's a terrible person here is the first half of what she says is correct, right? Violence on all sides is wrong. Anybody who encourages it is wrong. And then she goes ahead and she says, Donald Trump created this climate. That's her encouraging violence. You understand that? That's her saying, Donald Trump created this climate of violence. I fully understand why people are engaging in violence against Trump supporters. Okay, first of all, that's not even true. The climate of violence has been around in the Democratic Party since the 1960s. Hillary was part of it. Okay, Hillary is part of the incentivization of the Black Lives Matter movement. She was part of the incentivization of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Hillary, going all the way back to the 60s, was part of the anti-Vietnam War movement. Okay, all of these movements had violent components to them, and riots were a regular thing. For Hillary to blame Donald Trump for this is absurd. It's absurd, and it makes people angry. Right. Andrea Mitchell does the same thing. Andrea Mitchell on NBC, she's asked about Donald Trump's supporter getting egged, and she blames Trump. She says it's Donald Trump's fault that this supporter got
The egged. Fact is that there is tremendous antipathy right now around this whole race. Yet when they closed the registration for California on Friday night, Sacramento Secretary of State announced it is unprecedented, historic. Almost 18 million people now registered. 72% of those eligible have registered to vote. And this is, I think, really generated by the concern that Hispanics and others have about Donald Trump. That awful, awful egging of the Trump supporter in San Jose. Is I think you can't separate it from the egging on, no pun intended, in North Carolina and elsewhere that he did at his rallies. Okay. And what we've come to is a really bad place. I do think that Hillary Clinton elevated her attacks
in a
way that he did not have an answer for.
So she goes back to Hillary's doing a wonderful job. Okay, it's not Trump's fault if his supporters get egged. I'm sorry, that's not how this works. None of this works this way. David Brooks does the same thing. He also blames Trump. Okay, listen. I don't like Donald Trump. I don't know how else to say this. I think Donald Trump is a terrible person. Donald Trump is not responsible for his supporters getting egged or punched or hit with bricks. I mean, he's not responsible for any of these things. He's not responsible for people attacking cops at his rallies. Okay, that's not America. This is nonsense. But David Brooks says the same thing here because this is the new, this demonstrates that there really is this sort of panty-waist fascism that has crept up on the left and has infused parts of the so-called right like David Brooks, where if people just aren't genteel enough for Hillary Clinton or David Brooks, then they deserve to get beat up. It's just, it's ridiculous in every way. It's actually gross and fascist.
That in no way justifies or vindicates putting police officers at risk or attacking other people physically.
It's a little more like soccer hooliganism to me. It's a group of people who like violence. They tend to be young men. And Trump happens to generate this sort of excitement that gives them a pretext.
Oh, he generates the excitement that gives them a pretext. Or perhaps they're bad people. Why is it about Trump? It's not about Trump. It's about them being bad people. Again, what generated the pretext for these hooligans to go around burning down cities? What generated the pretext for them to do this, for goodness sake, over the World Trade Organization in Seattle, right? I mean, they used to burn things up and break windows in Seattle every year. They still do. Okay, is that because of Trump? This all is nonsense. But this attempt to blame Trump for everything, Trump's to blame for a lot of things, but blame him for the things he's blameworthy for. Blaming him for everything just undermines the value of truth. And as Newt Gingrich says, the country is going to become enraged if all of this continues.
Question, if these violent anti-Trump rallies continue into the convention, into the fall, how do you see it factoring into the campaign?
The country will become enraged. I mean, the fact is, you go look at Madison, Wisconsin, where there were huge demonstrations against the elected governor, Scott Walker, the elected legislature, doing exactly what they won the election on. If Donald Trump is serious about changing Washington, every federal employee union will be in the streets. Because the first thing you have to do to be serious is make it possible to fire corrupt, dishonest, and
but
illegal
workers.
You don't
think a conceivable backlash where people say Trump is just too divisive?
No, I think when people see the American flag being burned, they don't side with the people burning the American flag. I think it drives Hillary and Sanders into a very narrow box. This is 1968 all over again. This is the hard left saying, if you don't do what we want, we're going to be physically violent, and we're going to pick on some woman who can't defend herself. I don't think that is sustainable, and I think the American people will be repulsed by the idea that the hard left gets to dictate to the rest of us.
Okay, this is totally true. Gingrich is 100% right. And all of this provides Trump with his opening. So now the question becomes, Trump's got this opening. Hillary is extraordinarily weak. She can't even put away the geriatric socialist. She can't do anything. Hillary is an extraordinarily weak candidate. Meanwhile, Hillary and Sanders supporters are burning American flags, stomping on police cars, and attempting to beat up Trump supporters. All this provides Trump with his opening. All Trump has to do is project the face of a decent human being, right? That's all he has to do here. He just has to keep attacking Hillary and present the face of a decent human being. So can he do it? So over the weekend, let's find out. So Donald Trump starts with Judge Jeanine Pirro. He's on her show on Saturday night. He says, I'm going to bring people together in a way that President Obama doesn't.
Barack Obama has been a terrible president, but he's been a tremendous divider. He has divided this country from rich and poor, from black and white. I mean, he has divided this country like no president, in my opinion, almost ever. And number one, we need a cheerleader. I always thought one thing with him. I said he's unqualified to be president, and Hillary's unqualified. She's unqualified because she has very bad judgment. Hillary has horrible judgment, and Bernie Sanders said that about her. But Obama, I thought, was going to be a great cheerleader, and he turned out to be a very bad cheerleader. The one thing I thought he could do is bring people together, and it turned out to be just the opposite. I will bring people together.
Okay, so he says he's going to bring people together. Obama's a divider. Okay, this is what he needs to be saying. It's true. Obama is a divider. This is what he needs to be saying. And he's trying to bridge gaps with people he's disagreed with, like Paul Ryan. So here is Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan endorses Trump last week. And here is Trump responding to Paul Ryan's endorsement on Face the Nation.
He's most appealing. He's a good man. He wants good things for the country. We will agree on many things. We're not going to agree on all things, but we're going to agree on many things.
For instance, Paul Ryan,
well, I think we'll agree on, as an example, he really focuses on poverty. He wants to take people out of poverty. So do I. And we're going to come up with a plan.
Okay, so all of this is fine. I don't believe him, but that's okay. He's making his case now. So here is him making his case. So he's also asked about Hillary's accusations that he's thin-skinned. And here is Donald Trump. Here we go.
Why so thin-skinned?
I don't like lies. I don't mind a bad story. If you did a bad story on me for 60 minutes, if it were a fair story, I wouldn't be thin-skinned at all. You know, some of the media is among the worst people I've ever met. And I mean, a pretty good percentage is really a terrible group of people. They write lies. They write false stories. They know they're false. It makes no difference. And frankly, I don't call it thin-skinned. I'm angry.
But a reporter asked you a couple of hard questions at the first debate, and the whole week after that, it's war on that reporter.
Well, I don't think that was a fair question.
An impression is created, though, that you like to dish it out, but you can't take a punch.
Oh, I think I can take it. I can take it if it's fair. Again, if people say things that are false, which happens a lot with me, if people say things that are false, I will fight.
Okay.
Like, so, harder than anybody.
So he says he's not thin-skinned. In fact, he has the most beautiful skin. I mean, there's no pores in it or anything. You can see it's just a magnificent skin. It's the greatest skin anybody's ever had. It's skin that was made straight from God. It's amazing skin. Okay, so this is, again, Trump making his case. He's not thin-skinned. He's very fair to everybody. He's going to make nice with Paul Ryan. He's going to be uniter. And then we start to get a little bit dicey. So he's asked specifically about his foreign policy. He said before he was against the invasion of Libya under Hillary Clinton. And then he's quoted saying he was for the invasion of Libya, and here's Trump flip-flopping on it.
This is one of the things that confuses some people about your positions, though. You said you weren't for intervention, but you were for intervention in Libya.
I didn't mind surgical, and I said surgical. You do a surgical shot, and you take them out. But I wasn't for what happened. Look at the way it's, I mean, look at with Benghazi and with all of the problems that you've had, it was handled horribly. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Since then, you said you were never for interventions.
I was never for a strong intervention. I could have seen surgical, where you take out Gaddafi and his group.
Here's the part that where it really goes bad. So all of this is Trump just being, this is the best version of Trump, right? What we saw in the last three clips, best version of Trump. He's a uniter. He's going to bring people together. Even when he says he's sort of pro the Libyan invasion, he's sort of anti the Libyan. Okay, fine. So he doesn't know what he's talking about. But at least he's not starting riots. At least he's not creating violence. At least he's not back to the guy who's saying that he wants to pay people who punch protesters at his rallies. Right. This is good Trump. This is Jekyll and Hyde. This is Dr. Jekyll right here. And then we get Mr. Hyde. And here is where Trump is off the reservation. So he finally has this opening. As I say, Hillary's a terrible candidate. He's got riots against him. The opposition is lining up. They're looking bad. And then Donald Trump can't stop himself. He has no capacity to stop himself. So he's asked about his comments that we spoke about last week about this judge and his Trump University case. And a couple of quick notes going into what we're about to talk about. There are two arguments that have been made for Donald Trump by people who are conservative. One is Donald Trump is capable of change. The other is Donald Trump is somebody who ought to, is somebody who will listen to his advisors, right? This is the shtick. That one, he's capable of change. Two, he's going to listen to his advisors. What you're about to see is that Donald Trump is capable of neither. And this generates an enormous amount of headache for Republicans, for conservatives, for everybody, because Trump has no sense. He's going to lose this election, and he's going to lose this election because he has no discipline and because he's not a very good person. Here's Donald Trump being asked about labeling a judge Mexican for no apparent reason.
Isn't there sort of a tradition, though, in America that we don't judge people by who their parents were and where they came from?
I'm not talking about tradition. I'm talking about common sense, okay? He's somebody, he's proud of his heritage, and I think that's great that he's proud of
his
heritage.
But you're saying it's a barrier to him doing his job.
Oh, he's not doing me fair. He's not treating me fairly.
And you think it's not because, you think it's because of where his parents came from?
They go before the judge and he lets her out? Well, he can let her out, but you have to dismiss the case.
Yeah, I guess I'm just still confused what his Mexican parents have to do with that.
Excuse me. I want to build a wall. I mean, I don't think it's very confusing.
Well,
has nothing to do with anything except common sense. You know, we have to stop being so politically correct in this country, and we need a little more common sense, John. And I'm not blaming. I'm proud of my heritage. We're all proud of our heritage. But I want to build a wall.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So racism is common sense now, because here's the problem. There's a difference between saying there's legit criticism of this judge. This judge is a member of the La Raza legal board or whatever it is, the La Raza Legal Council. And what that is not National Council of La Raza. That's a different thing. But La Raza Legal Council is basically like the Hispanic advocacy group in the Los Angeles, in the California bar. There's a Jewish one. There's a black one. There are all sorts of these things. This particular one happens to be very much in favor of the quote-unquote rights of undocumented immigrants. If Trump cites that, we don't have a problem here. Right? He says, look, he's in favor of undocumented immigrants. He's made that clear. He's given out scholarships to them. Right, he could say all of that without mentioning his Mexican heritage. But the implication is he's a Mexican, therefore he must think all these things. And he says his heritage means that he doesn't want me to build a wall. Well, flip that around for a second. Flip that around for a second. There are people on the left who say about Trump, the only reason he wants to build a wall is because of his heritage, right? Because he's a white guy. So Donald Trump is a white guy, and that's why he wants to build a wall. People like me say that's racist. I'm not technically white. I'm Jewish. I want to build a wall. Why is that? Is that because I'm white? But Donald Trump, because he traffics in stereotypes and because he traffics in racism, he opens himself up to all of these things. And Jake Tapper hits him on it. Jake Tapper of CNN, he says, look, aren't you being a racist when you say the judge can't do his job just because he's of Mexican descent? He's not even Mexican. He was born in Indiana. He spent his entire life here. Right? He was actually, they put out a hit on him. The Mexican drug cartels put out a hit on him when he was a DA. And here's Tapper going after Trump.
Is it not when Hillary Clinton says this is a racist attack and you reject that? If you are saying he can't do his job because of his race, is that not the definition of racism?
No, I don't think so at all.
No?
No. He's proud of his heritage. I respect him for that.
But you're saying he can't do his job because of it.
Look, he's proud of his heritage, okay? I'm building a wall. Now, I think I'm going to do very well with Hispanics.
Citizen.
You know why I'm going to do well with Hispanics? Because I'm going to bring back jobs, and they're going to get jobs right now. They're going to get jobs. I think I'm going to do very well with Hispanics, but we're building a wall. He's a Mexican. We're building a wall between here and Mexico. The answer is he is giving us very unfair rulings, rulings that people can't even believe. This case should have ended years ago on summary judgment. The best lawyers, I have spoken to so many lawyers, they said, this is not a case. This is a case that should have ended. This judge is giving us unfair rulings. Now I say why. Well, I'm building a wall, okay? And it's a wall between Mexico, not another country.
But he's not from Mexico.
In my opinion,
he's from Indiana.
He is his Mexican heritage, and he's very proud of it.
Okay, it's egregious. And you watch this, and it's racism. I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. Now, does that mean he should be prosecuted? No, it's a free country. But it does mean he's saying something that's kind of terrible, right? Imagine that he take this out of context for a second. Let's say that he's stumping against Black Lives Matter, and he has a judge in one of his cases, and the judge is black, and he said, you know what? Got a black judge. He's not going to be fair to me. He's not going to be fair to me. He's a black judge. You say, wait a second, just because he's black? Well, you know, he's black, and I'm against Black Lives Matter. I think Black Lives Matter is bad. Wouldn't you say, wait a second, that's racist? You're saying he can't do his job because he's black. And maybe you disagree on issues, but you don't even have any evidence that that's the case. It would be so easy for Trump not to be a racist here, but he does it anyway. And we're now being told that he has no capacity to back off of it. So what's amazing is, again, there are two things. One, there was the argument Reince Priebus said, Trump needs to evolve. Donald Trump needs to evolve. He needs to change, is what Reince Priebus, the head of the RNC, said. Not going to happen. I mean, this interview is almost, it's the mirror image of the interview that Jake Tapper did with Donald Trump about the KKK, where Jake Tapper said to Donald Trump, do you condemn the KKK? And Trump said, KKK, I've never heard of the KKK. What's the KKK? I don't know. What's the KKK? Right? And Tapper says to him, well, all I'm asking you to do is, like, condemn the KKK. Here he's saying, well, he's from Indiana. He's not from Mexico. But Trump can't stop himself. So the idea that Trump is going to turn it down, it should be Trump, his campaign slogan should be Trump 2016, turn down for what? I mean, because bottom line here is he's not going to turn down for anything. The more people can, and this is why the Never Trump movement still matters. All these people who are consolidating behind him, now they're trapped, and he knows they're trapped, and they can't get out, and now they're stuck, and they're totally screwed, and there's nothing they can do about it. So Newt Gingrich came out, and he says that this is inexcusable. He calls it inexcusable. So naturally, Donald Trump immediately turns around and smacks Newt Gingrich, who's been a guy who helped push him up the ladder, right? Newt Gingrich has been a big Donald Trump fan. He wants his VP slot. Here's Donald Trump smacking Newt Gingrich.
You really respect Newt Gingrich. He wasn't just firing off. He said some nice things about you in that interview, but says, I can't condone. He doesn't understand where you're coming at with this. Does anything like that get through to you and make you reform your tactics when someone who's been a supporter of yours comes out and says this is a huge mistake?
All I'm trying to do is figure out why I'm being treated so unfairly by a judge. And a lot of people agree with it.
What's
all
your
I
message?
Want to do. All I want to do is find out, why am I being treated so unfairly by a judge?
Just terrible. Just terrible. I mean, so he goes after Newt Gingrich. So much for the idea that his advisors are going to control him. Remember that? On foreign policy, on domestic policy, on judges? His advisors will tell him what to do. Don't worry. It'll all be okay. His advisors will tell him what to do. There are people like me sitting outside going, I don't trust this guy. Prove it to me. But once you've bought in, once you're on the Trump train, even if you say he's just the lesser of two evils, now you own him. Okay, you broke the Republican Party, you bought the Republican Party. Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader. Okay, he's asked specifically about Trump's racist comments. Watch as Mitch McConnell, I mean, he already has the turtle look to him. Watch as he tries to crawl back into his shell.
Do you worry at all that your nominee now, Donald Trump, will do to Latino voters what Barry Goldwater did to African-American voters?
I do.
I do. And I think that the attacks that he's routinely engaged in, for example, going after Susana Martinez, the Republican governor of New Mexico, the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, I think was a big mistake. I mean, what he ought to be doing now is trying to unify the party. And I think attacking people once you have won is a time, if you can, to be gracious and try to bring the party together. So I don't agree with everything Trump says or does, but I do know that we now have a choice between two very unpopular candidates, very unpopular.
You've picked Donald Trump.
I do, because I know for sure he won't be four more years just like the last eight. He will be a change. Hillary will continue the policies of this administration, which I think have been very bad for the country. And so, and she'll pick the next Supreme Court justice.
Okay, and Tapper asks him consistently, is it racist? Is it racist? Is it racist? And he keeps saying, it's not something I like. It's not something I like. Yeah, well, you're stuck with it, and you don't have any impact on Trump. Trump runs the show, and you're just on board of this motorboat, this out-of-control motorboat. So enjoy yourselves. The media, meanwhile, they've now decided that they are going to go after Trump hard. Now, we knew this was coming, right? Who could have predicted, except for me, every single day on this program, who could have predicted that the media would have treated Donald Trump with kid gloves up to the general election and then flipped on Trump and decided that he was the worst person ever after elevating him to the nomination? After demonstrating that Republicans really are their id, that there's the id, the ego, and the superego. The id is the animalistic side of yourself. After demonstrating that Trump is the Republican id and that our id really is this kind of xenophobic, nasty guy, now they're going to turn on him. So Joe Scarborough, who helped elevate Donald Trump, I mean, really helped elevate Donald Trump, was just licking Donald Trump's posterior this entire election cycle. Joe Scarborough, now he's determined that he cannot in good conscience support Donald Trump. It's just absurd.
These Republicans this week who were so shocked and stunned and deeply saddened and offended by this clear act of racism had all the evidence in the world before that he had done things that stopped them from endorsing him. How do you endorse Paul Ryan, a man that supports the banning of 1.4 billion Muslims from ever entering the United States of America? You make him back down, actually. That's what I was hoping, that perhaps we could put pressure on him to back down and change that policy. Instead, Al, he's doubled down, and now it's people that may have, what is it, 1/16th Mexican blood? If you got 1/16th Mexican blood, then maybe you can't be a judge. 1/16th Muslim blood.
I mean,
this is unbelievable. He is getting worse, not better.
Okay, and Trump is going to be... here's the thing. This part doesn't hurt Trump because these people are terrible, okay? They're terrible. He's speaking to Al Sharpton, who has started race riots, for God's sake. He's speaking to a man who has called Jews diamond merchants, okay, who falsely smeared a white DA for not raping a black girl, right? Al Sharpton's the one that Scarborough's talking to. And here's Scarborough lecturing us all. Here's Scarborough lecturing us all about how Donald Trump is unacceptable. Okay, Donald Trump, here's Joe Scarborough, April 1st. Hat tip to Jim Garrity at National Review on this. This is a quote from Joe Scarborough, April 1st. You ready for this? Here it is. Joe Scarborough writes, "What is most astonishing is the rising level of rage among Trump's political enemies from inside the Republican establishment. Many of my conservative friends are sounding as arrogant, as unmoored, as left-wing pundits let loose on MSNBC during the Bush years." And then he says, and he basically comes out and endorses Trump, essentially. And now he's saying, no, it's just terrible. It's just terrible. This is just to show that all these people are so dishonest, it leaves room for Trump. So Trump has an opening. He fills it with his own stupidity and racism. And again, I've been very cautious all the way through this election cycle. I've always said that Donald Trump flirts with racists, but I've never called him a racist. What he said here is a racist thing to say. Okay, it is. That doesn't make it as bad as riots, by the way. And here's the other point. Here's the other point. Donald Trump is the natural side effect. They want to say that violence at Donald Trump rallies is the side effect of Trump. Okay, Donald Trump is the natural side effect of a left that has generated race-based violence for my entire lifetime. Right? Donald Trump is just the reactionary side to that. Okay, the left can be as racist as it wants to be. And if the right is racist like Trump, then it's the end of the world. Then it's the end of the world, according to these folks. Okay, Bernie Sanders tweeted out earlier today, he tweeted out that he thinks that police forces should be diverse so they reflect the communities they police. What he means by that is only black people should police black communities. That's racism, gang. But the left completely ignores it. The left completely ignores that they're talking to Al Sharpton, an actual racist. They completely ignore that Barack Obama is a racist, that Hillary Clinton says racist things. Right? They ignore all of this because they're on the left. When it comes to Trump, then all of a sudden, it's the worst thing in the world. In my view, it's the worst thing in the world all the way around. Now, this is why I say the answer to the fascism of the left, the mobocracy fascism of the left, isn't to vote for somebody like Donald Trump, who has many of those same inclinations. That's not the solution. And if you think you're saving the country from something worse by corrupting the only other party in America, that seems like a foolish hope to me. I mean, Mitch McConnell he's forced on national TV to say, he's asked, should the party of Lincoln embrace racism? And Mitch McConnell says the party of Lincoln needs to win. And if that's what the party of Lincoln is, then it's not worth saving. If the party of Lincoln is just the party of the Democrats, just a little bit less so, then what exactly are we fighting here? So if all this is depressing, and if you're depressed by all of this, don't worry, I'm depressed by it too. It's okay, we'll get through it together. It is a very depressing news cycle. And I'll talk a little bit tomorrow about where I think all of this is going, where it came from and where all of this is going. First, some things I like and then some things that I hate. Okay, the things I like and things I hate are related this week. So, Muhammad Ali died over the weekend. Muhammad Ali, of course, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. Some people say Rocky Marciano, but really it's Ali. Ali, every time he was beaten, he came back up and beat the person who he fought. Everybody from Michael Spinks to Joe Frazier. Amazing boxer. Most of his golden age of boxing was taken from him. He lost 3 years of his boxing career because he was a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War. He was a member of the evil and radical Nation of Islam, and he applied for a conscientious objector status in the Army after he was redrafted, and because he didn't like the Vietnam War. And then they put him in jail, and they banned him from boxing for 3 years. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that he had to be allowed to box again because conscientious objector is a fine status. In any case, you can't argue with Ali as a boxer. Ali as a boxer was tremendous, especially when he was young. They used to say he moved like a lightweight. He wasn't the heaviest puncher. Moved like a lightweight, terrific jaw. And probably that terrific jaw basically led to him getting Parkinson's in all likelihood, because you step on your feet for 20 years getting hit in the face, and that's going to have some tremendous health effects. The problem I have with the media coverage of Muhammad Ali is that Muhammad Ali was made into something more than just a tremendous sports figure. And a transformational sports figure, because whether you like the trash talk or you don't like the trash talk, whether you like the spiked football in the end zone or you don't, whether you like the showmanship in sports or not, Ali was the foundation of that. Ali was the showman. That's what he did. He's the one who's responsible for probably the direction of modern sport more than any other figure. If that isn't enough, and it isn't for the media, they've turned him into a cultural figure as well. They've tried to turn him into a political hero. And this is where I object. So, a couple of things that I like. First of all, really, really good book called Ghosts of Manila by Mark Cram. Really terrific book about the fights between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, and really traces Ali's entire life in this book. And it really is a terrific, terrific book. Not very long. You can get it on Amazon. Really is good. They made a documentary, not really out of this book, but around the same subject matter, called Thriller in Manila. HBO did this documentary. It was from the perspective, really, of Joe Frazier. And it's worth mentioning here. I'll go through some of the stuff about Muhammad Ali that's problematic in a second. Here's the documentary. You should check it out. You can see it on YouTube. Thriller in Manila.
All knees shall bow when I get the gorilla in Manila.
The Thriller in Manila was among the greatest fights of all time. It was the third and final confrontation between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali.
Ever again do we have two guys so important, so good, fight each other.
They weren't really fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world in Manila. They were fighting for the heavyweight championship of each other.
These two men hated each other. A personal hatred born out of the explosive racial politics of America in the 1970s.
When I get the gorilla in Manila.
I think Dodge gonna slap the hell out of him one of these days.
Years of animosity festered between these two heavyweight champions.
He works for the enemy.
In Manila, it took them to the brink.
And Ali looked tired.
Ali leaned down and he looked at us. He said,
That's the closest thing you will ever see to death.
So the documentary is really good, really, really good. It was made before, obviously, both of them were dead. So Frazier passed away several years ago. Ali, to trace his life a little bit, Ali was actually a racist. For most of his, from the time he became Nation of Islam guy, up till his transformation in the 1980s into kind of a softer side figure where he was all about charitable foundations and treating people well, excuse me, Ali said some tremendously racist things. The Nation of Islam is an evil organization. It was an evil organization. Louis Farrakhan, who leads it, is evil. Elijah Muhammad, the guy who founded it, was an evil guy. Malcolm X was sucked into its maw as well. Malcolm X had a transformation and was murdered by the Nation of Islam in all likelihood. Muhammad Ali said at the time, integration is wrong. He said no intelligent black man or black woman in his or her right mind wants white boys and white girls coming to their homes to marry their black sons and daughters. Muhammad Ali said, you got white racists who believe in separation, such as I believe. He said, don't give us nothing. Give us or repay us. You got 50 states. We make up 10% of the population. Give us 10% of the land. He said, we're not all brothers. You can say we're brothers, but we're not. I mean, this is bad stuff. And Muhammad Ali and Nation of Islam, they were involved in a lot of bad stuff. Muhammad Ali particularly abused Joe Frazier. I have a poster in my house of Joe Frazier knocking down Muhammad Ali in their first fight, signed by Joe Frazier. One of the great punches of all time. Joe Frazier was about 5'11 and a lefty, and Muhammad Ali was about 6'3, I think. A much bigger, much broader reach, and you can see it in that fight. Frazier's a much smaller dude. And Frazier, by the way, in that last fight, he was fighting him with one eye. He was blind in one eye and fought him with one eye, and he hated him so much. And the reason he hated him is because after Ali was banned from boxing for a few years, Frazier was now the champion. And Ali comes back, and Frazier doesn't have to give him a title fight. Frazier actually wrote letters to boards on behalf of Ali saying, please readmit him. He then gives him the title fight, and Ali proceeds to label him an Uncle Tom, pretend that Joe Frazier is in league with the white man. And it's worth noting, Joe Frazier grew up a lot poorer in Philadelphia than Muhammad Ali did, who grew up middle class in Louisville. And he treated him like garbage. You can see even in that preview, Muhammad Ali calling Joe Frazier a gorilla, which is racist language. He's a gorilla, right? You call him the gorilla and the thrilla in Manila. I mean, nasty, nasty stuff. Here's Muhammad Ali doing that to Joe Frazier, just in stock footage. This is, I think, around the time of the first fight.
I told you what I was going to do before I did it. I told you I was going to jab him in the corners. I was going to let him take all the shots. He was bewildered. Any heavyweight is bewildered and frightened. Frazier was, Martin was. I told you this is no skill. I told you he don't hit hard. I told you it would be a total mismatch. George Foreman is still one of the greatest heavyweights of all time.
People want to see me as Joe Frazier. They still think Joe Frazier can beat me. They don't want to see me and Ken Norton. They don't want to see me and George Foreman. They want to see me and Joe Frazier, although George Foreman annihilated Frazier, and George Foreman will beat Frazier every day in the week. George Foreman will beat Ken Norton every day in the week.
Okay, let's stop
and
it here.
I will beat George Foreman every day in the week.
Okay, so in any case, he really went after Frazier pretty hard. And not only did he go after Frazier hard, to the end of his life, Joe Frazier hated Muhammad Ali with a passion. He said, "And we fought three times, and if you look at the record, Ali won two of those fights. And if you look at Ali now, right, because he got Parkinson's, he was crippled, basically, I won all three." So, I mean, they really hated each other. So it's a fascinating story. And I like, actually, when people die, I like painting a fuller picture of their life. Ali did some really good things for sport, some really interesting things, made sport huge in the American scene. He also did some really, really negative things for America. And I'm glad that at the end of his life, he sort of flipped around. I sort of feel bad for Muhammad Ali just as a human being. Muhammad Ali was 4F from the Army originally when he was drafted because he had an IQ of 78. Obviously, he wasn't a brilliant guy, was fed a lot of his lines by the Nation of Islam, was sucked into their maw, and mistreated a lot of people. But I think by the end of his life, he'd repented a lot of that and become a better person. So that's what I like and what I hate about Muhammad Ali. Well, we'll see you tomorrow, and we will be back then with more analysis. Tomorrow is the day of the California primary, so we'll find out if Bernie is finally out and what that means for the race. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.